It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. We only have just 1 hour today. So, I mean, we got to get going. Brian and I were just talking about getting to the topic. And I know that I could just get to these topics and just fire these out. But then, I don't know, it just takes away the meandering of radio. I'll try not to meander. And if you're on the podcast, you can just skip through all that crap. I guess that's the thought. And I didn't realize how many people listen to the podcast version of this. So if you do, thank you for doing that. And I don't know if you can share the, I guess you can share the podcast with friends. You have the little share button, podcast, Wes Moss, Money Matters. But maybe people are already doing that. So I thank you for that. Anyway, it's Labor Day weekend. And it's exciting because we've got, you know, we're going to get the boys, get them out of the house. It's football season. I would say the first weekend can be a good weekend. So if you're like a Penn State fan, you almost lost. There was some tension there, but yeah, the Georgia game wasn't even a real game. So some of these matchups are just kind of almost like preseason games are just getting started. But it's exciting that football's here. And then pro football starting. So college and pro, it's a wonderful time of year. Money Matters, though, goes down to 1 hour at this time of year. And that we have to figure out what are we going to talk about in this crunched period of time. And we're going to talk about a really serious topic that is evergreen in the sense that you've got to always understand this, always know this. And I keep saying week after week we're going to get to it, and we haven't. The two things today that you will take away is the complexities and the simplicity of arguably the most important concept in being an investor or for being an investor, and that has to do with asset allocation. And there's so much to it. It's not as boring and vanilla as it just sounds on the surface. So this concept of diversification that really is asset allocation, which makes it more complicated. And then if you dig even deeper into the weeds in this, you end up seeing how vastly different the performances are when you look at different categories or different areas of the world. So if you look at not just stocks versus bonds, it's not just that. It's stocks versus bonds versus U.S. versus international versus different kinds of bonds. And then within the stock universe, small cap value stocks act very differently than large cap value stocks, and they all have their own parameters. And if you look over the course of history, you'll get this wonderful dispersion of returns in any given year. And that dispersion of returns is your friend. That dispersion of in the year 2000 and one, where the MSCI World Stock Index was down 20%, 21. The S&P 500 was down 12%. But small cap value stocks, many of these companies you would know, up 14 as a group, and bonds up 8.5. So there are places to hide when markets are bad. That's a big part of asset allocation. But what's cool about it is you understand the different pieces that do well when you're having a tough year. And that's a big part of what I wanted to talk about here today on Sunday morning. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. The main topic here, asset allocation, with a couple of other areas sprinkled in that are of great interest to you, because I get these questions a lot. And that's really where I find my material. As I'm reading through 100 different topics, when I stop on one, it's because, oh, I get that question a lot. Maybe people care about that. And that's this next thought of what we're about to discuss today here on a Sunday morning. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. The number in the studio, if you have a burning question, we are here. We are live for the next 1 hour. So call us in the studio, 404. Get out a pen, 404-872-0750. Hey, honey, let's call the show. Yes. That's why I'm here on Sunday mornings, 404-872-0750. Now, wealth percentiles. How rich are you, or how wealthy are you? How much money have you saved? I want you as we're talking to calculate that number in your head. We're just having a conversation. We're about to go through some planning and you're kind of adding up your assets. So I've got my 401k and then I've got my wife's 401k and then we have money that's in a brokerage account over there at Charles Schwab. And then we've got this other account that's a computer share account that just holds some stock. It's got the stock that we've had for like 15 or 20 years. And we don't even count it, but yeah, that's a lot, $72,000. And then we say, I've got this other brokerage account, and then I've just got cash. And it's probably more cash than I need. I feel like I should have invested it, but I haven't. And it all adds up to what? And then you've got your house, and your house is worth $450,000, and right now you only owe $100,000. So that's another $350,000 worth of equity. Well, let's add all that. So now, what's your net worth? How much have you accumulated? And you say, Wes, it looks like a million. It's $1 million. That's a lot of money. Hey, Wes, is that a lot of money? And I guess you want to know that because it's been a pretty damn hard road to get there, hasn't it? It's not like it just happens. You didn't just wake up one day and you have $1 million, right? But you look around and you think, wow, doesn't everybody have like around this? Doesn't seem like a lot. It just took me a long time. I'm here and it doesn't even feel like a lot because I got to live on this amount of money for the next 30 years. I'm going to retire in only a few. And then I say, and then the conversation goes to this point. Well, is that a lot? Do a lot of other people have that? Because I don't feel rich at all. It took me forever to get here. Here are some wealth percentiles in America. If you come up to me and you say, hey, I've got $1 million, where does that put you in America? Is it like half the people eventually get there? The answer is you're in the wealthiest 10% of the nation. There are 90% of the rest of America doesn't have that, doesn't even come close to that. That's what we're going to talk about just for a minute here. The wealth percentiles in America, the wealthiest 10% of Americans own 84% of all stock in the United States. 84% of all ownership, and that's in ETFs, and it's in mutual funds, it's individual companies, is owned by just you, 10%. The 10% of folks that have been kind of toiling away, trying to save money in your 401k, that's where most of the wealth is in America. That's a NYU study. Edward Wolf is relatively well known for kind of trying to track and segment who has what in America. Despite the fact that about half of America does have at least some stock. So about 50% of America owns at least a little bit of stock. And a lot of that is directly in 401k accounts, mutual funds, trusts, pensions. But it's the wealthiest 10% of households that really controls the vast, vast majority of wealth in equities in the United States. 84% owned by the wealthiest 10%. Well, okay. If you're a millionaire, though, what's the answer? How many people have this? Well, I just told you, this is just this year, the top 10% of Americans own an average of $969,000 worth of equities. $1 million worth of stock. So if you're there, if you have $1 million effectively stashed away into some sort of investment account, you are ahead of, in a savings perspective, an investment perspective, 90% of America. The next 40% owns $132,000 in investments and stock oriented investments. $132,000. That's the next 40%. So we just went 10 owns 970, call it. Then the next 40 that gets us to the top 50% of America. But that 40% averages $132,000. For the bottom half of families in America, just under $54,000 total in investments. Now, we've seen a huge rise, of course, from 2009 until 2009 until today. So we've had about close to, let's call it a 300% rise in the S&P 500 from 2009 to 2018. So you've got there's serious wealth that has been created really in the past decade for those who already started with stock or got through the financial crisis and still had something invested in markets. Now segment this even further. If you look at the top 1% of households in America, they own that 1%. The top one owns nearly almost 40% of all stocks and shares. Again, according to NYU economist Edward Wolf. Wow. So that's the answer. If you are, if you're even in this game and you're even listening to Money Matters because you care about what's happening to markets, well, you care what's happening to markets because you've probably been toiling away and saving money for a very long time. You didn't, it didn't just show up at your door. And if you're in that camp, it's a pretty rare place to be. It might feel like everybody else around you has just as much money or just as rich or richer than you. But the reality here is in America, if you say to me, hey, I have about $1 million saved, that's more money saved than 90% of folks here in the United States. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. And you're going to probably want to listen about asset allocation coming up here in just a few minutes. For the week, by the way, tech did well. NASDAQ up 2% on the week. S&P 500 was up 0.9%, was on a rally towards the middle of the week, and then we had more trade issues. We didn't get a deal done with Canada on what may still be called NAFTA. We've done a deal with Mexico. We're on the verge of doing a deal with Canada. We saw at least some progress this week out of the EU. Now, Trump said he didn't want to take this deal, but pretty remarkable, as we talked about tariffs all year, we're on tariff watch, the European Union offered up zero tariffs on anything car-related, automobile-related, automobile parts. So you look at what Trump's doing, you say, wow, I mean, is he pretty hard-nosed on this? Why can't we get some movement? We're getting a serious amount of movement. We've got to deal with Mexico. We're probably going to do a deal with Canada this week. And now you have the European Union coming to the table here in the United States saying, okay, we'll go down to zero on the biggest piece of trade that they really have to offer. It's obviously not the only piece, but the auto industry, cars, car parts, auto-related products, that is arguably the biggest, most important piece of trade we have with the Europeans. So for them to say, okay, we'll go down to zero tariffs, that's a huge step in what Trump is trying to get done here with trade. Yes, probably looking at another $200 billion worth of tariffs on another $200 billion worth of goods with China. Market did not like that this week, but I see progress. I see serious progress on the trade front. Stay tuned. You're listening to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. More Money Matters straight ahead. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
Money and investing advice you need.
It is Labor Day weekend. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Here we have 1 hour. We'll take your calls and your questions. We're live here on this Labor Day weekend. What do you do as a parent on Labor Day weekend? You try everything in your might to get your kids out of the home, get them off of technology, and get them out into the universe, into the wild, next to a pool so that you can keep them busy all day long. And that's exactly what the Moss family will be doing today. Remember, I've got 4 kids. All of them are boys. We kept trying to have a girl. We ended up not doing that. They just continued to be males, and we have 4 of them. So I've got my oldest at 11, then 8, then 6, then 2. Just imagine what that house is like. Try to watch football with 4 boys. And you think you'll watch it for like a minute, maybe 2, and then as soon as there's tackling involved on TV, they start tackling each other in a living room that's not made for tackling. And then the 2-year-old gets tackled and then everybody starts crying. It's just this cycle. It's football season. Good morning. So let's go to the phones here. Jim joins us in South Carolina. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can I help?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I am retiring at the end of this year. And I have 3 choices, and I'm trying to figure out what is the best way to go about this. I have a 401k with a major corporation that is quasi self-managed in that they do some managing too. So my choice is to leave it to the 401k and continue that process, move it to a major bank and either manage it or you provide their management services. Or move it to a company such as, you know, I call it the big green one, to kind of do both. My goal is to have a local resource. That's so that if anything happens to me, my wife is secured with an ongoing relationship for financial management that with someone that she's had, has knowledge of. So I'm trying to figure out what is the best, what are the pros and the cons of each and the advantages.
Jim, I think you struck a little bit of a chord with me on one thing that you just said there, and that's kind of really what you're doing here is you're kind of planning out really for the next 10 years because you're thinking about your wife. And if you've, it sounds like you've been the one that's probably done a lot of the management and kind of said, hey, I'm quote in charge of the 401k. But if something happened to you, God forbid, then what is, you know, where does your wife go, right? Is it, if it's still at a 401k, then she's got to choose a provider to try to help her with the money. Then she's got to go out in a difficult state and try to find somebody that she trusts. And then that's a really tough period of time. And to try to make a bunch of financial decisions. So you're kind of planning out in the future. And this is, again, one of these items that we don't ever talk about that we probably should, that is extraordinarily important and common. And that is a spouse, whether it's a husband or a wife, whoever is the person that's interested in the finances and interested in investing, says, you know, if you really think about it, my spouse, in your case, my wife, she didn't really get into this stuff. So I got to find somebody. I'd rather find somebody today that helps us for the next 10 and 20 than have her have to be forced to find somebody. So I think that if you keep that in mind, and Jim, that's kind of one of the driving sources, then the answer is probably one of the first two, or at least number two, what you mentioned. So I think when you say big green, you mean, it's kind of like big, there's big green and there's big blue. Big green is, and I don't mean IBM, big green is Fidelity, I suspect you're saying. Big blue would be Schwab. And those are the two areas where you can get money either managed by them, and you do have an advisor, or you manage it yourself, or you kind of have a combination of the two. If you find a local, quote, local provider, let's say, and there's a lot of wonderful firms in the Atlanta, in Georgia. You're South Carolina. Okay. Whether it's Georgia or South Carolina, you can find somebody that you really build a relationship with. And that's, I think, the important piece of the equation here. There are a lot of great firms that'll give you investment direction, Jim. You need to find somebody that you can feel as though they are looking at the bigger picture. So it's not just the investments, but maybe they also deal in estate planning. Maybe they also can look at your taxes. You might not need that, all those pieces, but particularly when you're looking for some sort of legacy that will help your spouse be financially secure after you're no longer with us, Jim. Then you want to really have a relationship that can provide all those pieces of the equation. And I would say a lot of the banks are probably not the direction you want to go. Fee-only advisory firms or registered investment advisory firms, fee-only, in South Carolina, in Georgia, in California, in Texas, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, doesn't matter what state we're in. That's the kind of institution, Jim, that I think you're looking for. Now, they may use... To your point, a lot of firms will use Charles Schwab as their custodian, and that's really where your money is, and then the firm manages the money. They might use Fidelity as the custodian, but then the financial planning firm you find in South Carolina is the one that's helping you make the investments, or they're making them for you, and then they're giving you guidance in all these other areas of the world. So I think that I would say no to a big bank, and I would say no to going directly to one of the big custodians, but find a registered investment advisory firm in your area that you can sit down with in person and have that conversation. Yeah, the money might be at sitting at Fidelity or Schwab, ultimately managed there, but I would say the next decade trend in investment management is independent RIA firms that you'll find, fee-only firms, that are just using these big safe areas as custodians. And then that way, you've got a relationship for the rest of your life. You could also find those folks at NAPFA.org, NAPFA.org. And that's where you will find hourly personal financial advisors at NAPFA.org. Jim from South Carolina, thank you for your call. We're going to run to news, weather, traffic right here. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
750 WSB. Depend on it.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. I said we get to asset allocation and diversification, topic that might sound a little bit boring, but when you dig into the nuances of different areas of the world doing well versus other areas of the world not doing not so well, wonderful, wonderfully important and interesting topic. And that's exactly what we're going to do right now. I also, we have more time here today in this 1 hour. So we may actually even have time for more phone calls. So again, if you've got a burning question about, we just talked with a gentleman from South Carolina that has a worry about where he goes from here in his 401k, he's 70. And he's worried about his wife not having a relationship with someone if it's just left in the 401k. And if something happens to him, where does he go? Does he go to a big bank, big brokerage firm, independent registered investment advisory firm, independent broker dealer? A lot of choice out there. Where do you go? What's a good long-term solution? And that was my answer to Jim was, I think you want to be finding a fee-only advisory firm where you can sit down, they can look at the bigger picture for you, so you have a relationship over time. And again, this is a world we live, we're all worried about our jobs getting outsourced to robots. Almost every industry has a worry about that. And of course, whether you're in manufacturing where it's really scary, or you're a lawyer and you're worried about legal law bots paying, you know, fighting traffic tickets, which is already happening, by the way, on the web. Or financial advice. There's a big robo. There was the big robo investment advice movement that started, call it in 10 years ago or 8 years ago, and worried the whole investment industry that we, as advisors, and I'm in the investment industry as a financial advisor, the chief investment strategist of an RIA firm. In full disclosure here on Money Matters, you worry a little bit. You say, wait a minute, are robots just going to, are algorithms going to take over everything? Or we're all worried about that. And the reality is that doesn't happen, will not happen, even in 20 years from now, in an industry that has anything to do with emotion or human interaction, period. That will not, and until robots can become emotional beings, that they will not be able to replace industries that are dealing with emotion. And as much as we think money is about algorithms and math and science, which it is to some extent, it's only half of the equation, because the other half is the emotional response that we have to money, and the how hard it is to come by, how hard it is to save, and how difficult it is to see it lost. And it creates this enormous volcano of emotion that goes along with financial planning and investing. Hence, I don't see human investment advice, because humans and advisors should be good at the emotional side and the personal side of helping money work for you and understanding how it should be invested and working with you as a person, not a computer. I don't see that getting outsourced or going away anytime, even remotely soon. And I think that's a great thing, because I think that's good. It's exciting to me. Anyway, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I said we're going to talk about asset allocation. We're going to do that exactly right now. By the way, the number here in the studio, we will take calls after this, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. Now, I'm sure you've heard of this word. I used to talk about this a decade ago when I first started in financial radio, thinking I've got to cover the basics. And then it's been a long time since I've really gone into this topic. But one of the most important concepts in investing, and again, the concept is asset allocation. And there's a lot of layers to this story. By the way, there's no exact Webster's definition for asset allocation. There's a definition for asset, and there's a definition for allocation, but there is not a definition of the two, not the two together. So within the investment world, it's understood as a concept of practice when you're investing, and using the practice of using multiple areas of the investment landscape, different investment categories that have different risk reward parameters, and bundling them together, putting them together, using them in concert. if you will, when you're investing. So asset allocation, it's the concept of balancing risk versus reward by adjusting the percentage you have in different core asset classes. So think in the beginning here, as we talk through this, just think stocks versus bonds. Stocks risky with lots of upside potential, but also lots of downside potential. Bonds much less, quote, risky, a little bit of upside, very little downside if you're looking and thinking about government bonds. Think about those two very different areas of the world, putting them together in one investment portfolio. Two very different assets, money allocated to both. So asset allocation is a way of implementing diversification. Diversification, which is, again, the practice of mixing a wide variety of investments within a portfolio. So think diversification for a second. Really, if I think about diversification, it's owning 20 different stocks versus owning one stock. That's just diversification within one area of the world. Asset allocation, think owning five separate areas of the world versus just owning U.S. stocks. That'd be an example of asset allocation. So instead of just owning U.S. stocks, I own U.S. bonds and international bonds, and I own U.S. real estate. And then I own small companies in the U.S. and large companies in the U.S. and emerging markets outside of the U.S. and gold and all these different, and then commodities. And I have a piece of all these different areas that are all very different, all have very different properties. So the foundation of a sound portfolio or a sound portfolio construction is really both having diversification and asset allocation. Now, we think of this, let's say, first as stocks and bonds, and then let's now add in cash. So stocks, bonds, cash. The concept is, again, part diversification of these core asset classes, and then the understanding of how much you want to use, what's the percentage mix you want to use in each one of those categories. And once you figure that out, that's going to determine how volatile your portfolio is. That'll determine portfolio variability return. It's not the actual investment return, but technically over time, it's the return variability, i.e. how volatile is each asset class? And the percentage, how much am I going to put into or dedicate into each one of these? Now, we go back into a little history. Back in 1991, there was a study by three guys, Brinson, Singer, and Bebauer. There was a paper called The Determinants of Portfolio Performance. And it was actually the second paper, number two update, found that on average, the investment policy, which is now synonymous with asset allocation, so investment policy explained 91.5% of the variation in your total investment returns from one portfolio to another over time, so over a 10-year period. They use this concept called investment policy, and back then and still is today, an investment policy statement is a statement that says we're going to use a certain amount of each one of these asset classes for the next decade or for the next 20 or 30 years. That's our investment policy. Today, that is also synonymous with, okay, this is our asset allocation. We're going to always have 60% in stocks. We're going to always have 20% in bonds. And we're going to have 20% in alternative asset classes, like let's call it private real estate or private equity. So that is the concept that back in 1991, very interestingly explained that concept of where you're going to put your asset, how you're going to structure your asset categories on a percentage basis. That explained 91.5% of the variation in your total returns. Hence, it started to become, again, one of these golden rules or one of these well-understood rules in investing. And we moved from this concept investment policy statement to, hey, asset allocation is a big deal. It's super important because it really determines over 90% of how volatile your overall portfolio is. So for example, pension fund, and this is a study on pension funds, by the way, pension fund A versus pension fund B, both had the same percentage mix of stocks, bonds, and cash. On average, you would expect their standard deviation, how much they move up and down, to be very similar over time. Now, I would say the concept is widely misunderstood as 91.5% of your returns are dictated by an investor's choice of stocks, bond, cash. when in fact it's the variation of your returns. So it's maybe better understood, and if I'm just maybe simplify all this, asset allocation is really, what does it really do? Well, it determines just how volatile a portfolio will be. And that in itself is an extraordinarily important concept to nail down. How volatile is your portfolio? And the only way to reduce volatility over time is to start, or one of the main ways to do this, is to start using other asset classes all in one, or different asset classes all together. So in practice, why should you use asset allocation? Well, that's very simply, if portfolios comprise of different core investment areas that move somewhat independently of one another, or in what we call this an uncorrelated fashion, using these areas together in one portfolio, all under one hood, can tend to smooth out the volatility and smooth out the portfolio risk over a variety of time periods. And that's the key here, is you have different and uncorrelated asset classes, you use them together, and they smooth out and how volatile your portfolio is on a yearly basis. Really, it's on any time period. Whether you look at it on a yearly basis or you look at it on a daily basis, you go in your account and you look at a day where stocks did really poorly. And if you own a bunch of different asset classes, you'll see that most of your stocks did poorly and were down, but you might see that your bonds were up in a given day. That's diversification at work in the course of just one day. So for example, stocks can crater in any given market day, -2%. Government bonds might actually go up 0.5% in that same day. In a given year, stocks may fall 15%, while bonds may rise by 10%. Also in practice, a portfolio can include well beyond just stocks, bonds, and cash. So what else can you add to this? Well, commodities, they kind of march to their own, or different beat of their, march to their own drum, if you will. Real estate, private equity, derivatives, collectibles. So even within one core investment area like stocks, asset allocation could include U.S. stocks and then international and then emerging markets and then within bonds, corporate bonds, and then government bonds. Add all those pieces together and it begins to give you not only diversification, but the asset allocation that smooths out how volatile you are in any, your portfolio looks in any given period of time. So the search for global, the search for asset allocation includes all of these different categories. Now, let's take this even further into practice. What does it do to your portfolio returns? Well, I said A, it smooths out your returns over a given period of time. B, it should enhance, and this is kind of the next piece of the equation, which is important. It should enhance your risk-adjusted return. So, for example, a well-allocated portfolio A has a risk, or you can measure this by standard deviation, how much up and down it goes in any given year. Portfolio A has a standard deviation of 15 and a total return of 12 versus portfolio B that has a standard deviation of 20, but it has a total return of, let's call it 10. You're looking at both of those different numbers. How volatile is my portfolio, and then what is my expected return? Enter in another concept that's part of the story, and that's called your portfolio efficiency or the efficient frontier in investing. So ideally, your asset allocation over time attempts to make your portfolio, quote, efficient. Efficient meaning that it's just the right mix of stocks and bonds and cash and any other asset classes that you want to put into the equation, including real estate, commodities. And that should, if it's efficient, bring down your overall risk without sacrificing a whole bunch of return. See, that's the key here. If your portfolio has the right mix of asset allocation, you can get very close to what's called this efficient frontier. And there's some math involved here, but really just says it's an optimal mix. It's an optimal mix of different investments that produces the most return for the least amount of volatility. And that's what this all is about. I want an optimal portfolio along the efficient frontier. Tends to have a great deal of diversification, This is a concept, by the way, that from a guy named Harry Markowitz way back in 1952, and he's a Nobel laureate. So I'm trying to help you understand here that if I get my asset allocation right, I've got this great mix that brings my volatility and risk way down without sacrificing a whole bunch of return. That's the whole key, and that's why this got so popular. It has become kind of a golden rule within investing. And I'm going to give you some examples when Money Matters returns. Stay tuned. You're listening to Money Matters. If you want to find the podcast, if you missed some of this, just go to podcast app, any one you want. Podcast is the purple icon on your iPhone. And find Wes Moss Money Matters. Subscribe to it. You can listen to it, fast forward, go backwards. But you're listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Planner Wes Moss.
And we are back. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. As we kind of close out the loop on asset allocation, which is just this super important concept in investing that is really meant to help reduce your risk and without sacrificing all that much return. Here's a quote. This is from a Forbes article. The search for a global blend boils down to seeking out asset categories that are not highly correlated, that vibrate in slightly different rhythms. Think of it that way. That vibrate in slightly different rhythms. Here are a couple examples. In 2002, the S&P 500 dropped 22%. Bonds were up 15%. In 2008, the S&P 500 was down 37%. Bonds were up 20%. 1981, the S&P 500 was down about 5%. Bonds were up about 8%. So it's the buffer that the two or more of these very different investment categories will provide you. Well, what does this do to $100,000 portfolios? Hey, Wes, what does it mean to me? If I put $100,000 in a balance or a mix between these two very different areas in 2002, S&P 500 was down 22%. The total bond market index was up 15%. So my $100,000 would have gone down, but it would have now gone down to 96,500 or down 3.5%. You know what? Horrible stock year, but I can live with that rate of return. 2008, S&P 500 was down 37%. The total bond market index was up 20%. So my $100,000 turned into $91,500 or down 8.5%. Still not good, but as an investor, I can live with that. 1981, S&P 500 down 5%, bond market up 8%. So my portfolio in a bad stock year, good bond year, actually went up about 1.5%. So think of this is a practice. Asset allocation is a practice, arguably the most important form of diversification. Diversification of various asset categories. It smooths out your returns and keeps you sane in down markets. Keeping sane and emotionally in check is another critical ingredient for being a good investor, being able to stay the course. So anything that helps you do that, anything that helps you stay the course or sleep well at night or understand and live with your investments without throwing you off course, arguably makes you a much better investor. And that's exactly what this does. So even if your portfolio isn't perfectly optimized every day of your life or over your investment career, even if it isn't resting squarely on the efficient frontier curve that I talked about, if it is well balanced and you have an allocation of two or three or five, which even better, different areas of investing will very likely do the job. It'll move you towards a better risk-adjusted return versus choosing just one area, like just stocks or just bonds or just MLPs, or trying to switch back and forth between each category. Balance is your friend. Balance is your friend. And I wrote about this back in You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. Benjamin Graham loves this balance. His pick, 50% stocks, 50% bonds. So we've gotten through what could be kind of a weighty, heavy, boring topic. But this is, I think, a perfect reminder that you've got to have all these different areas as an investor. And it's not meant to maximize your rate of return, but it's there to maximize your rate of return for the amount of risk you're taking. And for most investors, that's the biggest problem they face, is taking on too much risk and then getting thrown off course, then leading to even worse returns over time. And this real concept and practice of asset allocation, the whole point is to make it so that you don't do that and that you do have good returns.